Hey everybody, this is Scott Richmond with Baseball Canada, ex-Toronto Blue Jay. You're listening to The Walk-Off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
So thrilled to be joined by today's guest. He's been a mainstay in professional baseball for well over a decade. He pitched with the Toronto Blue Jays for three seasons and is the longest tenured member of Team Canada's national baseball team, who are currently in Florida for the Olympic qualifier over the week. Scott Richmond, welcome to The Walk-Off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
No problem. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, buddy. We're excited to talk some ball here with you. When did you guys get to Florida? How's the training baseball tune-up been so far?
So far, so good. The weather's been really nice, which is good. We got down here on Monday, started practice, well, pretty much got into a game the next day. Tuesday, Wednesday was versus USA, and then we played another team on Thursday, and then we practiced Friday, Saturday, and yesterday, and our tournament kicks off today, so we're excited to get started.
And it's been since 2019, since the national team has gotten together. I can imagine it's been quite a nice reunion after dealing with this pandemic.
It is. You know, a lot of guys are still living in Canada and Ontario there, so they're still locked down. So they come down to Florida. We're in a quarantine, so we're not allowed to leave the hotel. You got green wristbands on.
Right.
Making sure you get, you know, tasered if you walk out the front door. But it's good. It's good to be around all the guys. You got to do what you got to do to have a tournament happen. They have to get these teams into the Olympics, and we're looking to be one of them.
How tough was it for you to stay in game shape over this pandemic? I can imagine that game type scenarios were pretty few and far between.
Yeah, that was definitely not happening, but I try to keep my body in good shape normally. Now, pitching game shape is a little bit different, but you know, it's like riding a bike. You just have to get out there and do it, and your body's used to doing it. Yes, guys are a couple years older, but you know, it's just about getting the arm in shape and then executing pitches. In international ball, everybody's kind of coming out of the same window usually.
Yeah.
Guys are more advanced than others. Some guys haven't played in a year and a half. But once you toe the line and get between the lines, you know, all that competitive nature kicks back in. You give it your best, and that's what we're known for.
How are you boys feeling? I know you play Colombia tonight, Cuba tomorrow, Venezuela Wednesday. It's not the easiest schedule. What's the headspace like in the clubhouse right now?
Great. We're happy with where we're at. We're lined up well, so we feel good about what we're doing. Usually we're left-handed dominant hitting, so it's nice to have a well-balanced lineup this go-around. Gives us some more options when we're facing their bullpen, so it'll be good for the guys that way. A lot of guys are healthy, so that's really good too, coming into a tournament. I don't know. You know, we've done well against Colombia in the past. Mm-hmm. Cuba, the last few tournaments, we've competed well against them and beat them a few times. So even the Premier 12 in Korea. So, you know, we're feeling good. We feel good. Venezuela, it's just a different thing when you're in the Olympic qualifier. Guys come out of the woodwork.
Right.
Major league players that normally aren't in international ball are now on the team because it's such a big deal. So You can't take any team lightly, not like you can when it's not an Olympic qualifier. But typically these teams now are a little bit better, just because these guys come out.
And I mean, you're a guy, Scotty, who has been on the international stage many times over the last 12, 13 years. You even won a silver medal in the Pan Am Games as recently as 2019. And your team, like Team Canada this year, is a fairly veteran team. How much does experience at a tournament like this play to Canada's advantage? And do you still get nervous for stuff like this?
Good questions. I still get nervous before starts because I feel like if you don't get nervous, you don't care. A lot of guys still get nervous. Regardless, once you throw that first pitch and you stand on the rubber and you're pitching, it's like I said before, it's like riding a bike. Here we go. Okay, execute, hit the glove, move ahead. You're not worried about anything, but leading up to that, it's the unknown. It's the how am I going to feel when I wake up
right.
That day? How's my stuff going to come out? And then once you get out there, it's just like, okay, here we go. We've done this a million times. Let's do it again. So that's fun. The veteran side of it is always an advantage. One thing that Canada really brings into these tournaments is a lot of our core group is the same over the years. Now, people can look at that as a negative. We look at it as a positive. We know how to play international baseball. It's way different than affiliated baseball. There's no get them tomorrow kind of thing. You win every game like you're game seven. You have to put your best arms out there if you're in it. You got to hold the fort down, score early, hold the lead, use your bullpen accordingly. You know, every run you score, they got to score two to beat you. So every run is humongous. Even the kids now when they're here, they're talking to me about, hey, so what's the difference between international ball and affiliated ball? It's like you're in game seven every game. You got to win every game. There's no get them tomorrow. You got to. If you got a chance to get hit by a pitch, you roll into that thing. You get hit by a pitch kind of first. Like,
yeah.
We've had just guys in the past.
Do or die mentality, eh?
100%. And we've got guys that do that. You know, they'll wrap it up, they'll tape it down, and they'll get out there and play injured. And it's just different when you got Canada across your chest. And international teams know when they play us, you're going to get a really tough game. You're not going to get a walk in the park. You're not, you know, you're not facing the Philippines here. Like, you're facing a country that's won back-to-back golds and got silver, been in three gold medal games in the last three Pan Ams. The last Olympics that went on, we were in it. So,
yeah,
you know, Beijing 2008. So we were there. So these countries know that we're here to play ball, and we held our own against the U.S. We lost 2-0 and then 3-1. But, you know, they're running out Edwin Jackson and Homer Bailey and, you know, these guys. So it's good to hang with them and just know that they're the favorites. And when USA is not in the Olympics after, you know, two teams left, they're going to come at it real strong. So
yeah,
it's good to always go up against them and see where we're at. We're feeling good.
That's great. I love that. I know I was looking at the tournament format, and maybe you can clear things up here for the listeners. The first place winner of this tournament goes to the Olympics. That's a done deal, right?
Yeah, best of
all. You're not out of it. Like, if you win second or third, you're still in it, right? You go to another tournament?
Yeah, so it was going to be in Taiwan, but now it'll be in Mexico City.
Right.
So okay. that the best record in the tournament. So two pools of four, top two teams at each pool advance. If you beat the team that advances with you, you go into the next round 1-0, they go in 0-1.
Okay.
Best record. It's not round robin. It's best record overall. So it's fun. Score runs, many runs as you can. Get the best record you can, regardless, and then get after it. And then if you finish second or third, you'll go to Mexico City within a week, 2 weeks, and play in a tournament down there with the other team that made it. And then Netherlands, Australia, and Chinese Taipei will join us down there. And winner of that tournament goes to the Olympics.
Very cool. Now, I know technically you would have been pitching for Team Canada at the Beijing Olympics that you just mentioned there. And but dang it all, you wound up being in the big leagues. Dang those Blue Jays, eh? How big would it be for you to represent Canada at the Olympics?
It's why I'm still doing this. It's why I'm still playing and having a pandemic. When we were supposed to qualify last year, the tournament was in Arizona. I live in Arizona, so yeah. It would have been really convenient that way.
Yes.
It's just not in the cards. It wasn't in the cards. You know, global pandemic hit, and it's all of a sudden put everything on hold. So when we talked again about the tournament, I just want what's best for Canada. If that's with me on the team, then great. If that's not, then great. Like, I want Canadian baseball to bring the up-and-comers and bring the kids that throw in 96 that might not quite know where it's going, but can get away with it because they have electric stuff. Like, you got to get them going. You know, but Greg and Ernie and the guys, you know, they thought that having me out there and leading the team again would be beneficial. So I'm honored to do it. I don't take it lightly. I don't just come in going through the motions. It's harder and harder and harder to get ready for these things. And, you know, you got wife and kids and family. Yeah. It's a lot of sacrifice. So a lot of people just need to understand that a lot of people put a lot of things on the back burner to make this happen and have a dream come true. So like you said, I was on the Olympic team in Beijing, was called up the day before. My whole career, the Olympics weren't in Rio de Janeiro and they weren't in London.
Yeah.
And here we go again in Tokyo. So it's like, hold on. Can you still play? I'm fortunate enough to still be able to do it, and we'll see what happens.
I love hearing that, man. Number one, I love that you're on the team, and I love that it's still significant to you to put that maple leaf on the chest. That's very great. I'm curious about your role on the team this year. Are you in the bullpen? Are you stretched out enough to start? Where are you lining up here?
I'm scheduled to start game three against Venezuela.
Game three against Venezuela. Very cool. That's great.
So now stretched out is a different word. I'm going to give us as many innings as we can go. But I pitched,
I can imagine that's how it's going to be, eh? Is like the starters aren't going to be expected to go 6-7 innings.
Well, Andrew Albers is pitching today, and he's in AAA with the Twins, and he's throwing 6-7-8 innings. So he will be going as long as he's competitive.
He's stretched out, yeah.
He's stretched out. Ryan Kellogg is our second starter against Cuba. He's stretched out. He's more of a long reliever, but he can give us 3-4.
Yeah.
Our bullpen's strong, so guys can go multiple innings in there. Now, back-to-back days, that's a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time of year, some of the young kids have some restrictions too, where they just can't go back-to-back days, which is fine. I definitely can't, so I have to start. But no, it's just going out there and you're attacking them. We got John Axford here. It's a blessing, you know, a veteran guy. All the young kids are totally pumped, and we're totally pumped to have him. He looks great, looks sharp. Scott Matheson, you know, excellent career over in Asia. Still throwing mid-90s, and just excited to get out there and get this first one going.
How many innings do you think you can go? How's your arm feeling?
Three? I went two.
Like, what's your goal?
Against the U.S. Yeah, I went two against the U.S. and did fine.
Yeah.
I'd hope for three.
Yeah.
It's the up and down. I don't know if you guys played ball or whatever, but it's the up and down.
Yeah.
You know, it takes time to build that up. You just can't sit on the bench and just ramp it up again. Your body's telling you to stop, and you're like, no, keep it going. So. I don't want to be out there just getting smacked around. Not
of course.
I'm not mid-season form, but
yeah.
You're going to get every single second I got. And then as soon as I start going down, they'll have somebody ready because they know where I'm at.
So it was pretty cool, man. I was on your Instagram story the other day and I saw Larry Walker, Hall of Famer, Larry Walker, signed a jersey for you. What's it like having Larry around the team? That's got to be pretty darn cool.
Yeah, he's been a beauty. He's really given back to the program a lot. He doesn't miss a tournament.
No, he doesn't.
He comes all over the world with us. He's not at this one because of the quarantine lockdown and this thing called the Cooperstown coming up soon. So he's got some other obligations going on. But he's been absolutely amazing. Being a BC guy growing up, even though he wasn't a pitcher, there wasn't many Canadian baseball players in the big leagues. And being a guy from the lower mainland, it was just like, okay, dude, you're my new favorite player. Here we go. You know,
yeah. And
making the Hall of Fame on his 10th year and just.
Oh, he's a beauty. It's so like when he made Cooperstown, I think every Canadian, there wasn't anyone who just felt a little bit of extra pride, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So he's a great guy and we're honored to have him all the time and just. It's really cool to have a guy of that stature just give back without even no questions asked. He helps all the young kids and the kids are just in awe, but he just treats everybody like, hey, I want you to get better and let's get out there and work.
Yeah, that's very cool. So both Adam and I are Albertans. I'm in Calgary and Adam is in Edmonton. And let me tell you, my man, honestly, Scott, you're like a beacon of hope in this province, kind of an example that baseball in Alberta and just playing independent baseball in general can get you somewhere. I'd love to hear about your time in independent ball with the Cracker Cats in Edmonton from 06 to 08. What was that experience like?
It was my first experience of pro ball, you know, I didn't know anything about professional baseball. I knew I wanted to try to play it. Mm-hmm. I had like an interesting route to college ball. So I was in medicine. I was in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan in a wood bat league after I quit my job on the docks in Vancouver and went over there and did well. And the coach there knew a coach in the States. And it was at Missouri Valley College in Marshall, Missouri, small little 2,000 person school. Jumped from there, four-year NAIA, then my coach left, went to a junior college, and I'm like, well, I'm trying to go D1. Now I figure out D1's the best. I got to go D1. So I go to junior college at 22 years old. Boom, at a junior college, Oklahoma State gives me a scholarship. So I'm like, well, I got to go there. That's the best school that's recruiting me. Went there, and 9/11 hit earlier on, and I couldn't get a visa. So I wasn't able to get drafted. They were talking to me 5th through 10th round. Couldn't get drafted. went back my senior year, same thing, 5th through 10th, couldn't get drafted. Blessing in disguise now for how long I've played, I'm able to get, I got my degree.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. but then after my senior year, I was like, I guess I'm done. Like, no team drafted me and Canadian and can't get a visa. So I don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden the Edmonton Cracker Cats called. I'm like, who? And I had no idea. I didn't really know. I didn't really know independent ball either at that point. I didn't really know. But went up there my first year and didn't do that great because I already threw a full season in college. And, you know, it was like, I think the first year for the Cracker Cats, you know, Stubby Clapp was the big name. And then Jeremy Ware, Ryan Redmanovich, Mike Kusevich, bunch of ex-Team Canada guys.
Yeah.
And then the second year I went back and I was a reliever. I was like, I don't throw hard enough. Like, this isn't, I'm not getting out of here. And these are tough decisions to make, right? Like, you're an indie ball and you're like, hey, coach, like, I don't want to be relieve anymore. Like, I want to get out of here and this ain't going to be my ticket.
Yeah.
So I need to be starting and show them I can eat innings and get outs and go deep into games. So I said, I'll come back for my third year. And I did well as a reliever. And then I come back my third year. I said, hey, listen, I got to start. I got to start or I'm never going to get out of here. And this is my last crack at it. I'm now like 26.
Yeah.
My third year in indie ball, like, make or break, and started, went to the All-Star game, started the All-Star game, did well. I think we're on a 4-man rotation for like 4 months, you know, 10 and nine, but like ton of divisions. And then, you know, the guys, the Team Canada guys knew, they knew obviously Greg Hamilton. They called him and said, hey, we got a kid over here. You've never heard of him. You need to give him a shot. You need to come see him. He can contribute to the national team. And by that point, I was like, if I can't get drafted, I want to play for my country, like, period.
Right, of course.
I'd hound Greg. Greg, hey, man, I heard there's a tournament coming up. There's a tournament coming up, man. I'd love to be on the team. Like, anything I need to do, let me know. If I can come throw a bullpen for you, whatever. So I was just pushing hard for that. And then the Blue Jays called, and they sent out a Team Canada guy, Rob Ducey.
Right.
Who was the international scout for the Blue Jays back then, and or independent ball scout or something, I don't know. And then he came out and watched me pitch in Winnipeg.
Was Ducey, did he come see you through Team Canada, or was...
No, he came saw me with the Cracker Cats.
Yeah, so it was a Cracker Cats contact that kind of reached out to him.
Some of the Team Canada guys.
It was the Team Canada guys who reached out. Okay, cool.
Ducey had played for Canada too, and then he was taking this new job, and he's like, hey, man, you got to check out Richmond. And these guys just made it happen because I didn't have any connections. It was cool, though, that he came out, and then they invited me to a workout in Florida. And from there, I was the old guy at the workout. All these guys are 21, and I'm sitting there 26 years old. There was 10 pitch. I'll never forget it. I drove from Oklahoma State with my best friend, and we threw in parking lots and truck stops all the way down to keep my arm loose. And I went down there. There was 10 pitchers and 10 hitters, and I was the last one because I was obviously the oldest. I was 5 years older than everybody else, and I wasn't going to start in low A, so they figured out the 3 best hitters and threw me against them, and I did really well. So
that's cool.
They called me in the office and kind of told me the same story I'm telling you guys. I was like, hey, all right, old guy. Where have you been? What's going on here? And I just tell him my story. Like, I just slipped through the cracks. I didn't throw 97. Like, I wasn't, somebody was, look, I was just low 90s, 3 strikes, 4 pitches.
And man, it must have felt like such a whirlwind. I mean, to go from independent ball and then you go to the Jays, you start a few starts in July or June and July, you get sent back down to AAA, you get called back up in September, you win your first major league game. Like, how did you deal with the mental highs and lows of that year? It must have been all over the place.
Yeah, it was different. You find out real quick the major leagues is a business.
Yeah.
Real quick. But it was awesome. Looking back, I didn't have the pressure on me, but looking back and knowing the game the way I do now, it's like, if I stumbled at all, if I struggled even a little bit, they would have been like, hey, you know, Scott, we gave you a good chance. Like, thanks for coming out. You know, appreciate the effort. Go get them. Good luck. Hey, Edmonton, you still want me back? Like, you know, there was no room for error. So when I signed, they put me in AA, and 4 months later, I was in Toronto in 2008. So,
how cool was it? Like, what a big deal was it for you to win Rookie of the Month with the Jays in the American League in April 2009? That must have been pretty validating for you.
For me, for the organization, for, okay, we did a right thing here. It really proved to them that I could pitch at that level, which helped me stay all year because they could hang. Well, you know, he started off great, and I think we had the best record for the first couple of months in the American League, or at least in the AL East. Just knowing you're contributing is a nice feeling. As a fifth starter, as a rookie, you're just trying not to get pounded every game. You know, it's like you're actually contributing to wins, and the team is counting on you to win now. And that's how it's always been. But when you're at the highest level in the world doing that, you're like, holy crap. Okay. Like, this is like, and the whole time, like I told you, when you're in Missouri Valley College and you go to a junior college, then Oklahoma State, then also an indie ball, and then double A, triple A. That's all I ever wanted to do, is just climb the ladder and just see where I peaked. Like, just see where the pinnacle was. It could have been in Oklahoma State. From junior college to Oklahoma State, all of a sudden I go there and I'm just like getting rocked. I'm like, well, this is an education now.
Yeah.
But fortunate enough, I kept learning and practicing really hard, and I wasn't given the most talent, that's for sure. But I love the game, and I love the practice, and I love to learn. And
I think it's why there are so many Canadians that are drawn to your story, is that you did take kind of an unconventional route to the big leagues, and it was all about perseverance and just continuing to, like you said, climb that ladder, right?
Mm-hmm. That's how we have to do it. You know, there's a few of us that can just kind of get first, second, fifth round.
Right.
You can make it right into the minors and get a bunch of chances because you throw hard, you hit homers. And that's fine, but we're behind the eight ball in Canada. You know, we don't have high school baseball.
Yeah.
Like, we're behind the eight ball. You come down to the States and you go to a showcase, or you go to a college that's pretty decent, you find out real quick that you're not the best player on the team. And there's a lot of kids that have a lot of talent and a lot better coaching than what you had.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's cool about the guys now, all X-Team Canada guys. They're going back to Canada and they're opening up clinics. They're opening up camps and they're doing a whole bunch of things and teaching the youth of Canada. So now we're hopefully getting another wave, because we're bringing back all the knowledge we've learned, which is super important.
No, it's great. In fact, we even just chatted with Michael Krause and Tyson Gillies. And of course, they're running a little, just like you said, you know, like a training camp in Vancouver. And it's great to see these guys on the national stage that are giving back like that. It's great for the sport and the country. That's for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. It's what it needs. You know,
it is. Yeah.
We've got a lot of knowledge from where we've played over the years. And the kids need to know that and need to get their mental game strong and, you know, figure out a way to get better when there's snow on the ground and freezing cold outside.
Yeah.
And, you know,
do these and things. I mean, like, you're a guy, Scotty, who has been around the game forever, you know, like, you're a very experienced guy when it comes to that. And so I'm curious about your most interesting or even memorable or even upsetting mound visit. Like, have you had a manager or pitching coach come out to the mound and you wind up in a combo or a situation that sort of stands out to you right now?
I never wanted to show anybody up, regardless of how I felt. Coaches are doing their job. Sometimes they do it the way I wouldn't have done it. But you have to respect them. You can't show them up on the mound. The more things that I would get heated on inside would be in the dugout or something. Like, when they'd come over after you'd have a bad inning, and go, hey, man, like, what were you thinking here with this pitch? And how come you didn't go with this pitch? I'm like, it's easy to say now after I've thrown the pitch, but I thought I was going to get him out with that pitch. That's why I threw it. You know, like, don't micromanage a pitch after I've thrown it. It's really easy to be a pitching coach there. So
right, hindsight like makes it so easy to give you what you should have
so
done.
So easy. Well, if you would have done the totally opposite of that, you could have got a punt. It's like, okay. So it's fine though. It happens at every level. And just try to take the good with the bad, and some coaches give you insight that really resonates with you or motivates you, and some coaches give you stuff that you're just like, all right, man, I appreciate the help, and then water off duck's back and doesn't really resonate with you. So
It's funny about baseball because it really doesn't matter how long you play the game. There's always new lessons and new things to learn. Have you learned anything new about the game lately? Like, even if it's a new grip, a pitch, a mindset, whatever it is, what's baseball's most recent lesson for you?
Just me personally, I'm getting older. I'm still doing this like into my 40s, which is, you know, a feeling in its own of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I'm pitching different than I had to before. And one thing that I'm proud of myself is I was always a pitcher. I never blew it by anybody. I never just had raw stuff that I could just rear back and have it just move all over the place and just aim for the heart of the plate. I had to locate, change speeds, mix pitches, pitch in off the plate to get away. So the older I get, when your stuff declines, you still know how to get out. You still know how to pitch.
You get crafty.
You just get craftier. You
know? Yeah, craftier.
You've
right?
always been crafty. but you see some of the guys that throw 98 and all of a sudden they stop throwing 98. Now they're 91, 92. And they're like, darn it, I need to locate this now. And that's not, you can't just pump that down the middle. It's like, no, you have to make sure you hit corners at that speed.
Yeah.
And they seem to struggle a little bit more, but I don't know. I've always been good with location. And that's one thing I notice is just the older you get, you just have to pitch a little different, use a few things that you've learned along the way. And it's still hitting spots and locating regardless of your velo. If you hit a spot, they're going to have a hard time hitting it. Hitting is really, really hard to do.
Locating is such a huge thing. Like, I know it's been your big advantage in baseball since you started playing pro ball. Do you think it, like, velocity is so pushed these days? Like, you don't see location from these kids coming up quite like you used to. Is it just that the stuff has gotten so much better, it's not quite as needed? Like, it just seems weird.
Well, there's definitely a lot more harder throwers now than there was when I was coming up. I think they're more focused on making sure that ball spin rate is coming in spin at the rate, velocity they right. want it to. And, you know, they got all these weird scores they keep track of. Some of the kids on the team are talking to me about it. It's like, they got this like score of every outing you have. It's out of 100 if you throw a first pitch strike, but the spin rates, I don't know. It's like you have a score you get. So if they're just trying to get a high score, but not really worry about your outing, I don't know where that translates. I feel like if you have three down and get outs, you're rocking and rolling. But if your spin rate was low and you weren't, you know, locating in this proper quadrant, get outs. Get outs, you're going to go up, right? I don't know.
No, it's true. And it's funny because baseball is, here's a little stat for you. I guess in 2011, there were 214 pitches thrown at 100 miles an hour or more in Major League Baseball. And this year, up to May 15th, that number was 378. So it's almost double in a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, velo has gone up a lot and it's become such a priority for these teams. But yet you see guys who can locate, guys like Hyunjin Ryu on the Jays, right? He's like you. He didn't top out more than 92 is this where he kind of tops out at. But it's just like control is such a big deal. Do you think we'll see the pendulum swing back? Like,
I don't think for a while. I think too many guys are still throwing hard. I think the spin rate stuff's going. I think some teams might go 50-50, like not incorporate full bore spin rate. But, you know, there's guys that just swear by it, and they know when they face a team like Kellen Deglin, our catcher. Mm-hmm. He's on the Yankees in AAA Scranton. And he said, like, they've got wristbands. They've got the whole analytics department dialed in. The Yankees are full on board with that. And when you face another team that they don't have wristbands and they don't know quadrants and they don't know what gets outs and all this, you see it on the field. He's like, I see it. When I'm facing it, when a team pitches against me that has all this information, it's a lot harder to hit. And then when the team that doesn't have it, I'm enjoying facing them because they don't know what I can't hit. Anyway. So
that's interesting. It's working. That's why they're doing it, obviously.
You know. They got a lot of money too, so they can just invest in that.
So I do have some listener questions here for you, which we'll get to really quickly, but I did wish to just ask you before that. I mean, we've touched on the fact that you've been playing international ball now with the Canadian national team for 13 years. Is there a moment or an accomplishment in international play that kind of stands out to you?
Oh, for sure. Being on the mound to close out Canada's senior men's team first gold medal in Guadalajara, Mexico in the 2011 Pan Ams was pretty big against the U.S. The U.S. always brings the next best studs, right? Like, they just got the best players. So to close that game out, I wasn't even a reliever. I didn't really have a great tournament, but the coaching staff trusted me to finish that 2-1 ball game. Albers threw a great game, and I came and finished it off with 2-2 1/3. And we won 2-1 for Canada's first ever gold. It was like surreal. And then the next Pan Ams, we walked it off against the U.S. again and won in 15 back home in Toronto.
I remember that. I was in Toronto at the time. That was so cool.
You know, we play international ball and we're never on home soil. Like, no. Never. We're all over the world getting booed. And but to do it on home soil, not just win silver against a really good team, but to walk them off, pretty tough to beat those two moments. And we're trying to get to the Olympics and get that Olympic medal. That'll be a icing on the cake, and we'll call it a career.
Create another top moment. I love that, man. All right. So before we let you go here, and we do really appreciate your time and wish you all the best in the tournament here, but I do have some listener questions for you. So this one's from Emma in Toronto. She says, "Hey, Scott, so cool you're doing the podcast. I was actually at the game in Baltimore you won your first game at." I was going through the questions that were submitted. Right away when I saw that, I was like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. She's like, "Was that your most memorable moment of your career? And if not, what was?"
Major League first win for sure was. It was a gloomy night. I remember Curtis Thigpen was catching a couple of young guys out there and just having fun like we were in AAA. So the pressure was kind of off. You'd already been there for a little bit and had it won. So you're like, here we go. It's September. Like, just give it a shot. And you got some AAA guys coming up. So it was really nice. It was a rain shortened win. So it wasn't a full nine. I think it was like 7 or 8, but still really, really great. But my best memory was a short notice spot start for Doc on Sunday Night Baseball against the Phillies, where I punched out 11.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
And I had 3 strikeouts myself because Scott Downs broke his toe the night before. So I had to take 3 at bats against Jamie Moyer. So I actually had 14 punch outs.
Which is still the most K's you ever had professionally, right?
I don't know if 11 is the most I've had professionally, but it majorly, yeah, my major league career, 11 for sure.
Yeah. All right. Your next question is from Angelica in Vancouver. She says, "Hey, Scott, so glad to see you're still out repping Vancouver and the Maple Leaf. Curious if you can see yourself getting into the coaching side of things with all your experience. It seems like a natural fit."
Yeah. So I live in Arizona, but I do have all my family back in the Vancouver Lower Mainland. So what I try to do is when I get back there, I try to run camps. I try to give in. I got my buddies are on the Vancouver Island too. So I do stuff out there with them. I'm big into helping Canadian kids get better, whether it's, you know, providing lessons or just going back and, you know, giving speeches or doing things that like are my buddies who are coaches at colleges try to go back and just give motivational kind of little speeches just to say, "Hey, listen, it doesn't matter just because you're coming from Kamloops doesn't mean you can't make it, you know?"
Yeah.
So just do things like that to motivate kids and go, if he can do it, anybody can do it. Right. And people just say that. People say that when you make it.
Yeah.
But it's like the truth. I've been told my whole career, like, yeah, you don't throw hard enough. Like, but one thing that I always had going is you're tall. I'm 6'5". And like one thing they said is you can't coach height. Like you either you're tall or you're not tall.
Yeah.
As a pitcher, 6'5" pitcher, it's like, okay, let's give this kid another shot here. Like he's got the frame. And everybody always sees it. Like, oh, let me guess, pitcher. And you're like, yeah.
Okay, my man. Your last question is out of Saskatchewan. So Mike from Regina says, "Hey, Scotty, best of luck this week in the tournament. Curious, when you look back on your career, who do you figure are some of the top players that you have played with as a member of the Jays or the national team?"
Oh,
I know. Lots. There's probably a pile.
Lots. Well, being a Canadian, you know, I got to play with Matt Stairs on the Blue Jays, which is cool. Got to play with Roy Halladay, obviously, AJ Burnett, things like that. Scott Rolen, you know, and then, you know, playing with Stubby Clapp's cool. These young guys here don't really, you know, he had a similar story, kind of like a grinder story, make it up, you know, world's against you and you did it. You got there, you know, from Windsor, Ontario, like, you know, like a lot of Canadian stories are just really feel good stories. You know, I was even talking to Axford here. It's like, he even has a really cool story that's not spoon fed and he made a 12 year career out of it in the big leagues. So there's some really, really cool stories out of Canada. And, you know, even WBCs are huge too, where you just playing with Joey Votto's and Morneau's and Dempster was there. And, you know, Freddie Freeman came to the last one in 17 and, you know, just, it just never ends, you know, the Saunders and guys, you're just honored that you can share the same field with them and represent your country and be one of those top players in the country, which is really cool. The big leagues is a whole different ball game, but representing your country at these classics and going, hey, I'm one of the top 25 players in the country right now is a huge honor and not taken lightly. So when you're part of those, and then you come to these tournaments that are on a backfield that are no fans, you got to keep that same intensity for the kids that these are their first tournaments and you'll get to that big tournament one day, but you got to play these well to get there. So don't take these lightly. And we're going to go out there and shock the world and get into the Olympics.
Well, Scotty, we are so thrilled that you're back on Team Canada. We'll be rooting you on. All the best to you and Team Canada over this qualifier, man.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to the Walk-Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday. Thanks for listening.